We continue Be'ezrat Hashem in our limud of Masechet Ketubot. We are up to Daf Pe Dalet. However, we begin five lines from the bottom of Pe Gimel Amud Bet, from the words Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer. This limud is Leilu Nishmat Rav Shalom Cohen ben Tfacha Malka, Yair ben Tova, Naim ben Chatun, Yom Tov ben Chana, Shaul ben Latife, Erez ben Miriam, Baruch ben Shelomo, Luba bat Mazal, Chai Esther, Chava bat Sarah, Eva Shlomit bat Ilana Esther, Rivka bat Dvorah, Eta Rivka bat Mordechai, Sulika bat Chana, Alehem HaShalom. And also Lizchut Refuah Shlema for Elisheva bat Neta, Esther bat Sarah, Chana bat Sulika, and Gabriela Masuda bat Sarah. We're going back to the Mishnah, where we have the opinion of Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel regarding the husband who wrote a declaration that he relinquishes his rights from the property of his wife. And the last case of the Mishnah was where he says, I relinquish my rights even to inherit the property. So according to Tanakama, it says, Ivi meta eno yorsha, that he relinquished his rights, so he doesn't inherit. If she dies, he doesn't inherit the field. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel said, no, in this case, this tnai that he made regarding the inheritance is not valid. He does inherit her nonetheless. Why? Because it's matne al mash katu b'Torah. It's a condition that is made counter to what the Torah says. And kol matne al mash katu b'Torah, tna'o batel. If you make a tnai that's against what's written in the Torah, the tnai is batel. Because Rabban Shimon Gamliel holds that the halacha that the husband inherits his wife is something that is by law of the Torah. So the Gemara begins by saying, Amar Rav. Rav says, again, we begin five lines from the bottom of Pei Gimel Amud Bet. Amar Rav, Rav says, Halacha k'Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel. In fact, the halacha is like him, like Rabban Shimon Gamliel, who says that such a tnai to relinquish his rights from inheriting his wife is not valid, but velo mita'ame, but not from his reasoning, not the reasoning of Rabban Shimon Gamliel, who says that it's because tnai al mashekatu b'Torah. No, because of a different reason. So now the Gemara wants to clarify this statement of Rav. My halacha k'Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel velo mita'ame. What does he mean when he says the halacha is like him, but not because of his reasoning? What is he referring to? So what does Rav mean? So the Gemara asks like this: Ilema halacha k'Rabban Shimon Gamliel de'amar imeta yirashena. If we say that Rav means like this. On one hand, halacha is like Rabban Shimon Gamliel, who says that if she dies, he inherits her, like Rabban Shimon Gamliel said. The lav mitame, but not from his reasoning. The ilu Rabban Shimon Gamliel savar, because the reasoning of Rabban Shimon Gamliel is because he holds matne al mashkatu b'Torah tena obatel, that you're making a tnai against what's written in the Torah and therefore it's invalid. The rav savar, and Rav holds tnao kayam, and Rav holds no, the tnai actually is kayam. Meaning, normally, matne al mashekatu b'Torah, the tnai is valid. Just over here, the reason why he agrees with Rabban Shimon Gamliel is that he's not inheriting her, meaning that it's not valid, it's because v'kasavar yerushat habal derabanan. He holds that the halacha, that a husband inherits his wife, that's only midrabanan. And therefore, v'chachamim asu chizuk ledivrehem yoter mishel Torah. And chachamim reinforced their institution, their halachot, in a greater way than those of the Torah. And therefore, they decreed that the yerusha of a husband cannot be canceled in any way. Which means, if it would be mideoraita, like Rabban Shimon Gamliel holds, then Rav would actually hold the tanai would be kayam. The stipulation would be kayam, because he holds that amatne al mashkatu b'Torah, now kayam. The reason here why he agrees, at least with the halacha of Rabban Shimon Gamliel, that the husband does not inherit, is because he holds Yerushat HaBaal is the Rabbanan. The halacha of inheritance of the husband is Mide Rabbanan. Oh, it's Mide Rabbanan. Chachamim, they asu chizuk ledivrehem. They reinforce their halacha in a very strong way, that even if you make a tnai against what they said, tna'o batel, in this case. Is this what Rav meant, the Gemara is saying? Is this what Rav is saying? So the Gemara says, but how? on the top line of Pedalet, Vesava Rav Tenao Kayam, does Rav really hold that Matne al Mashikatuba Torah, the Tanai is valid? Because that's what you're telling me. You're saying, according to Rav, really Matne al Mashikatuba Torah, the Tanai is valid. Over here, it's different because it's Midrabanan. Does Rav really hold that if someone makes a stipulation against that which is written in the Torah, the stipulation, the condition, the Tanai is Kayam, is valid? Vehaitmal, but we learned.
Ha'omer lechaviro al menat she'en lecha alai ona'a. If let's say a person says to another person, I'm selling you this al menat she'en lecha alai ona'a, on the condition that you have no claim of fraud against me. Which means, even though there is a prohibition against fraud by the Torah says, lo tonu ish et amito, but the purchaser, he agrees to waive his right to make any complaint on this. So he says, "L'chaviro al menat shein lecha alai ona'a." Rav amar yesh lo alav ona'a, u'Shmuel amar eino alav ona'a. Rav says he still has the right to claim ona'a, to claim a fraud against him, and the seller would have to reimburse the purchaser because he can't go against what the Torah says. Lo tonu ish et amito. Shmuel says eino alav ona'a. Shmuel says he doesn't have a right to claim because of the tanai that was made. But what do we see here according to Rav? Rav holds, matne al mashkatu b'Torah is tanao batel, not kayam. If you make a tanai against what's written in the Torah, the tanai is batel, it's invalid. So therefore, we need to go back and understand, what does Rav mean when he says, the halacha is like Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, but velo mitame, not from his reasoning. Ela, rather, the Gemara explains, what he means to say is, Halacha ki Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel de'amar ha-matne al mashkatu b'Torah tna'o batel. The halacha is like Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, who says that one who makes a tanai against that which is written in the Torah, the tanai, the condition, is void. Ve'lav mita'ame, but not because of his reasoning. De'ilu Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel savar, because Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel holds that the right of the husband to inherit his wife is mideoraita, and therefore savar meta yirashena. Therefore he holds that if she dies, regardless, he inherits her, and it doesn't make a difference the tanai that he made before. The Rav savar, but Rav holds, no, the inheritance of the husband, that's only midrabanan. And therefore, meta lo yirashena, and against the takana of Rabbanan, a person could make a tanai, and being that he waived his right, he said, En li din udvarim enichsich, even after you die, lo yirashena, he doesn't inherit her. So that's what Rav means. But the Gemara immediately rejects that by saying, Hai mitame velo kilchatehu. That doesn't make sense. That's according to his reasoning. It's not according to his halacha. Meaning, the statement of Rav was, halacha is like Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, but not because of his reasoning. So here, what you did was, you flipped it around. You said that that Rav holds like Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel's reasoning of Matne al Mashkatu b'Torah Tna'o Batel. But in the halacha, he argues. But that doesn't make sense. He's saying that the halacha is like Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, that if she died, yirashena. Just he doesn't hold of his reasoning. So it's the opposite of what you're saying. Hai mitame velo kilchetehu. This explanation that you just gave is telling me that Rav holds of the reasoning, but he doesn't hold of the halacha. But that's not what Rav said. Ela, rather, the understanding of the wording of the words of Rav is as follows. Halacha ki Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel de'amar imeta yirashena. Yes, Rav holds the halacha like Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, that in this case, even when she dies, he inherits her. However, velav mita'ame, but not from his reasoning. What does that mean? De'ilu Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel savar b'de'oraita tna'o batel. Because Rabban Shimon Gamliel's reasoning is that he holds that only in matters of de'oraita, if a person makes a tanai counter to something that's written in the Torah, the tanai is void. Ha b'de'rabanan, but let's say he made the tanai in something that is only an entitlement b'de'rabanan, such as, let's say, the entitlement to the perot, tana'o kayam, then the tanai would be kayam, would be valid. Ve'rav savar, Rav holds, afilu b'de'rabanan tana'o batel. Even in the Rabbanan, even if he makes a Tanai against a Takana of Rabbanan, Tanau Batil, the Tanai is void, which means if he would make a Tanai to waive his entitlement on the Perot, the Tanai would also be Batil, it would also be void. That's what he means. The Gemara once again rejects this explanation also, because Hai Ketame Ukilchatehu, I mean, in this case, you're telling me that he holds like his halacha, and he holds like his reasoning of Matne al Mashikatu Batorah, Verav Mosifu, and Rav just adds onto it. He's adding that even in the Rabbanan Tanau Batel, but that doesn't make sense in the words that Rav said. Rav said halacha is like him, but not like his reasoning. Here you gave me an explanation where he does hold like his reasoning. Therefore, finally, the Gemara explains as follows. Ela, this is what Rav meant to say. Halacha kerabban Shimon ben Gamliel de'amar imeta yirashena. He holds lehalacha like Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, who says that if she dies, still he inherits her, despite the tenai that he made. Ve'lav mitame, but not because of his reasoning. Meaning, de'ilu Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel savar yerushat ha'bal de'oraita v'chol ha'matne al mashikatu b'torah tana'o batel. The reasoning of Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel is that the right of the husband to inherit the wife is mid'oraita. And being that he made a Tanai against that which is written in the Torah, his Tanai is void. That's the reasoning of Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel. Rav holds of the halacha that he is Yoresh, but from a different point of reasoning. Ve'rav savar, Rav holds, no. Yerushat ha'ba'al d'rabanan, the right of the husband to inherit his wife, it's really only mid'rabanan. V'chachamim asu chizuk ledivrehem keshel Torah, and Chachamim reinforced their words, their institutions, just like if it would be mideoraita, meaning to say that if you make a tnai against it, the tnai is batel. So according to Rav, although he agrees with the halacha of Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, but it's because he was matne, he made a tnai against the derabanan, and to make a tnai against the derabanan is also tnao batel, just like if you would make a tnai against a deoraita. That's the meaning of the words of Rav. So the Gemara asks, V'Rav savar Yerushat ha'bal derabanan? You're telling me that Rav holds that the right of the husband to inherit his wife is only an institution midrabanan, it's not midoraita? Vehatenan, but we learned in a Mishnah in Masachet Bechorot, Dafnun Bet, Rabbi Yochanan ben Beroka Omer, Rabbi Yochanan ben Beroka says, Hayoresh et ishto, one who inherits from his wife, Yachzir livnei mishpacha, he has to return the property to her family members during the Yovel year, vinakelahem min adamim, and he deducts for them part of the monetary value of the property, which means he can claim only part, but not all, of the property's value from the wife's relatives. Vehavinan ba, and we asked a question on this teaching, Maika savar. What does Rabbi Yochanan ben Beroka hold? Ika savar Yerushat ha'ba'al de'oraita, if he holds that the right of the husband to inherit the wife is mide'oraita, amay yachzir? Why does he have to return the property to his wife's relatives? An inheritance is not given back in the year of Yovel. Ve'ide Rabbanan, and if he holds that the right of the husband to inherit the wife is only mide'rabanan, damim mayavitayu? What's the purpose of the money that he receives from his wife's relatives in exchange for the land? Mideoraita, the property belongs to the woman's family, and they don't have to pay him anything. So why is it vinakelahem min hadamim that he deducts for them part of the monetary value, and he receives from them some of the money? Why is that? So mimanavshach, does he hold Yerushat ha'ba'al deoraita? Why does he even return it? If he holds it's derabanan, why is he getting any money back? The Amar Rav, and it was Rav who answered this question, Leolam kasavar Yerushat ha'ba'al de'oraita. Really, Rav Yochanan ben Beroka holds that the inheritance of the husband is a halacha min ha'Torah. Ukegon shehorishatu ishto bet ha'kvarot. And the reason why, despite its midoraita, he has to give back the land to the woman's family is because we're talking about a case where the land that he inherited from his wife was what? A bet hakvarot, a family's graveyard. So then, mishum pigam mishpacha, because of the need to avoid any flaw of the family, we don't want to harm the family's name, If the wife's family would have to be buried now in plots that belong to others, when they always had their own piece of land for that, so in order to preserve the honor and dignity of the family, that there should not be pigam mishpacha, amu rabbanan lishkol dmei v'lehadam. That's why Chachamim said, please take money as compensation from them and return the land, the graveyard, to them. Umay yenakeh lahem min hadamim, and the Gemara explains, what's the meaning of he should deduct for them part of the monetary value of the property? Dmei kever ishto, it's referring to the monetary value of his wife's grave, because the husband is obligated to pay for his wife's burial, and therefore he has to deduct that value of her burial plot from the value of the field. But the money he'll get back. Kedetanya, as we learned in a baita, that there are halachot that are connected with burial to uphold the honor of the family. It says in the baita, hamocher kivro, in a case of one who sells his grave, vederech kivro, or he sells the path to his grave, ma'amado, or he sells the place where visitors would stand to comfort the mourners by the grave, umekom hespedo, or he sells the place of where people eulogize, ba'im b'nei mishpacha ve'kovrim oto be'al korcho, the members of his family still, they could come and bury him in his plot that he received from his ancestors against the purchaser's wishes. Why? Mishum pegam mishpacha, due to the kavod of the mishpacha, to avoid any flaw into the dignity of the family. We don't want to harm the family's name if a member of their family would have to be buried elsewhere. So what do we see from here? We see that there are halachot when it comes to bet hakvarot regarding pigam mishpacha. So now all this was brought, why? To show, we see from here, l'cha'ora, that Rav holds that Yerushat HaBaal is mideoraita, because that's how he explained the opinion of, that's how he chose to explain the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan ben Beroka, that he holds Yerushat HaBaal is deoraita. So how could you say that he's holding that it's midrabbanan? The Gemara answers simply, Rav le'ta'ame de Rabbi Yochanan ben Beroka kamar. Rav is only explaining the reasoning of Rabbi Yochanan ben Beroka, ve'lelo svirale, but he, on his own, Rav himself, he doesn't hold like that. He holds Be'emet Yerushat HaBaal is midrabbana. Therefore, it's not a question from that explanation that he explained the words of Rabbi Yochanan ben Beroka. The Mishnah begins by saying the following, Mi shemet v'iniach isha u'bal chov ve'yorshim. Someone who died, lo alenu, and he left behind a wife, he left behind a ba'al chov, a creditor, someone who he owes money to. Ve'yorshim, and he left behind heirs. Now, all of them are claiming payment from his property, right? Ve'haya lo pikadon o milve biyad acherim. Now, he had also a pikadon, a deposit that he deposited by someone, or a milve, or a loan, in the possession of others. So Rabbi Tarfon, Omer, Rabbi Tarfon says, Yinatnu lakoshel shebahem. The pikadon or the milve, the deposit or the loan, should be given to the weakest one of them. What does that mean? The koshel shebahem, the weakest one of them? The one who is most in need of the money. Rabbi Akiva Omer, En merachamim badin. Rabbi Akiva says, when it comes to justice, to judgments of litigation, we're not acting here with mercy. En merachamim bedin. If the halacha is that it belongs to a certain party over the other, then we follow the halacha. We put aside any considerations of rachamim. Ela, therefore, rather, yinatnu layoshim. The halacha is that the money that he has as a pikadon by someone or as a milve by someone should be given to the yoshim, to the heirs. Shekulam tzirchim shvua ve'en ha'yoshim tzirchim shvua. Why the heirs? Why the inheritors? Because all the other people who want to take out payment from the property that's now in the hands of the orphans, they have to swear. Before they collect their debt, they have to swear. But the heirs themselves, the yoshim themselves, they don't have to swear. And they therefore have the more absolute right to the father's property than anyone else. That's why Rabbi Akiva says it should be given to the yoshim. Continues the Mishnah, Iniach perot lushim min hakarka. If let's say the one who died left behind produce that was detached from the ground, Kol hakodem bahem zachah bahem. So then, as far as those three people that we mentioned before, whoever is first to take possession of them as compensation for what was owed, whether it's the creditor or the wife or the yorshim, they acquire the produce. First come, first serve. Zachta isha yoter miktubata. If, let's say, the wife acquired the produce, let's say she was the one to acquire it first, and it comes out that it was worth more than the payment of her ktuba, ubal chov yoter al chovo, or let's say the creditor is the one who was the first to acquire the produce, and it was worth more than the value of the debt that the deceased person owed him. Hamota, so what do we do with the extra? What should be done with the surplus? Rabbi Tarfon omer, inatnu lakoshel shebahem. Rabbi Tarfon says it should be given to the weakest of them, either the creditor or the wife, depending on their circumstances, whoever needs it most. However, Rabbi Akiva omer, en merachamim badin. Rabbi Akiva says, no, when it comes to judgment here, we don't go by rachamim, ela inatnu layorshim. It should be given to the heirs. Once again, why? Shekulam tzechim shvua, because the other two, they have to swear in order to collect. En ayorshim tzechim shvua. The Yoshim do not need to swear in order to collect, therefore you give it to them. That's the Mishnah. The Gemara begins by asking a question, Lama li levitni milve, lama li levitni pikadon? We notice that the Mishnah told us if he left over a pikadon, a deposit by someone of money, or a milve, or a loan. And therefore, who do you give it to in order to pay up? So what the Gemara asks, why do you have to mention two cases? Why do I need the Tana to teach the halacha in a case of a loan and in a case of a deposit? Why mention both? You could have given just one example and that would be enough. The Gemara answers, tzricha. It's necessary to teach the halacha in both cases. Di Tana milve, if it would only give the case of a loan where he left over a loan. Behakama Rabbi Tarfon, that's where Rabbi Tarfon says his opinion that you give it la koshel shebahem, that you give it to the one who is most in need. Mishum de milve leotza'a nitna. Because we know a loan, money of a loan is given to be spent. Leotza'a nitna. So that means there's no existing property here that is to be given. There's an obligation to pay back the loan of the money that was spent already, right? So therefore, since there's no existing property, so you can give it to the weakest person. That's where Rabbi Tarfon said his halakha. Aval pikadon de ite be'ene, but in the case of a pikadon, a deposit, which exists in its form, in its unchanged form, not just as an obligation. It's the item itself, right? That's a pikadon. I would say in this case, ema model el Rabbi Akiva, maybe in this case, he would admit to Rabbi Akiva that it belongs to the Yorshim. So that's why the case of Pikadon was also mentioned in order to teach me that Rabbi Tarfon's opinion applies to Pikadon as well. And v'itanaha, if it would only say Pikadon and not Milveh, so I would have said Behakama Rabbi Akiva. I would say by Pikadon, where it's the actual item, that's where Rabbi Akiva said En merachamim badin, and you have to give it to the Yorshim. Aval behach, but by Milveh, since it's not really the money is not around, it's only an obligation to pay a loan. Ema modele Rabbi Tarfon. Maybe Rabbi Akiva, in that case, I would say agrees with Rabbi Tarfon that you could give it to the weakest person. Tzricha, that's why it's needed to tell me Milveh, to teach me that Rabbi Akiva says his halacha even in such a case. Now, the Gemara is asking on the wording of Rabbi Tarfon when he said inatnu la koshel shebahem, to the weakest one. Mai la koshel. What does it mean here? What do you mean by weakest? What do we go by over here? So Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Chanina omer la koshel shebereaya. To the one, the money is given to the one whose proof, re'aya, is koshel, is the weakest. Which means the one with the latest date on the shtar, attesting to a debt. Which means the one who has the latest date, so his document, his shtar is the weakest. Because one can collect from property that was sold by the one who died only if it was sold after the date of the loan. So it comes out that the one who has the latest date has a more limited amount of property that he can collect from. So that's called koshel shebareaya. That's the weakest of all those who have proof. So the one who has the latest date, that's the one that Rabbi Tarfon said he should be receiving the motar in the Mishnah, or he should be receiving the milve or the pikadon. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Rabbi Yochanan says, La Koshel is referring liktubat isha, to the ktuba of the wife, mishum china, because of favor, which means Chachamim instituted halachot regarding the ktuba for the advantage of women, to make them feel more secure in their marriage, right? Due to the fact that they wanted men to find favor. Chachamim wanted men to find favor in the eyes of women. And therefore, Lakoshel Shebahim is referring, you give it to the wife who is collecting for her ketubah. And the Gemara says that this machloket between the Amoraim, Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Yochanan, is ketana'e, is actually corresponding to a machloket already among the Tanaim. Rabbi Binyamin Omer, Rabbi Binyamin explained, La koshel shebiraya, to the one whose proof is the weakest, vehu kasher, and that is the proper way to do. Rabbi Lazar Omer, liktubat isha, it's given to the wife for her ktubah, mishum china, due to the fact that Chachamim wanted men to find favor with women, so to give grace for women, therefore this is an advantage that's given to them. The Mishnah said, "Hiniach perot tlushim," that if the husband left behind produce that was detached, so the Mishnah said that the first one who claims it, who seizes it, acquires it. And then there was a machloket in the Mishnah between Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva, what to do with the motar, what to do with the surplus. If let's say the worth was more than that which was owed to them. So the Gemara is asking, Rabbi Akiva, my iria mutar? According to Rabbi Akiva, why do we have to discuss specifically the case of motar, of surplus? Kul hunami diyoshim habu. I mean, all of the produce, according to Rabbi Akiva, not only the surplus, not only the motar, belongs to the heirs, to the yoshim. Are Rabbi Akiva holds that the entire property goes to the heirs. Right? Even if the others took possession first. So why are we talking about the mutar, according to Rabbi Akiva? The Gemara answers, you're right. Inachinami, that's true. That's true. You're right. According to Rabbi Akiva, there's no difference between the, let's say, the pikadon, the milve, or the detached produce, the perot lushim. But ve'aydi da'ama Rabbi Tarfon mutar, but since Rabbi Tarfon is speaking about the surplus, according to him, it does make a difference. Tana ihu nami mutar. So therefore, he was also talking in the halakha regarding the surplus. However, according to Rabbi Akiva, you're right. The halakha would be the same regarding the perot lushim themselves. So now the Gemara is asking, Rabbi Akiva, tfisa lo mehanya klal? What? Are you telling me that according to Rabbi Akiva, tfisa, seizing, holding on, if let's say someone who is a creditor, right? Who holds on to assets due to the debt that is owed to him, right? Even in a case where there are other people who have right to these assets, lo mehanya klal, is it not effective at all? The fact that he seized it first, tfisa lo mehanya klal, Amar Rava, Rava says, Amar Rav Nachman, in the name of Rav Nachman, vehu shetafas mechaim. That according to Rabbi Akiva, meaning Rabbi Akiva agrees that yeah, tfisa is effective. But that's in a case provided that a person seized it, he seized the property from the love while he was alive. But after his death, as our Mishnah is talking about, then already the assets belong to the Yoshim and tfisa would not help. So although, yeah, Rabbi Akiva holds tfisa helps, but that's only mechaim. That's when the one who owes him the money is still alive, but not after his death when the Yoshim already get it. Uli Rabbi Tarfon, the Gemara asks, and according to Rabbi Akiva, to Rabbi Tarfon, who holds that whoever seizes it first has acquired it, right? The manchi hecha. What are we talking about here? Where is this produce placed? Where is it? Meaning, where are they that they are not in the reshut of the yetomim, of the orphans, that they're not, you know, under the in the domain that already belongs to the yetomim, to the point where Rabbi Tarfon says that the tfisa, the holding on to them, would work. Where are they found, these perot? Rav Shmuel d'Amri Tarvayu. Rav and Shmuel both say, "Behu shetzvurim u'munachim birshut harabim." We're talking about when we say that Rabbi Tarfon says, whoever takes possession first of the produce acquires it, that's where, in a case where tzvurim umunachim birshut harabim, that the perot, the produce, are gathered in a pile and they're placed in reshut harabim, in the public domain. Since in reshut harabim, it's not a suitable location for an act of a kinyan, anyone can take the produce and acquire it. Aval besimta lo. But if these perot were situated in a simta, in an alley, that means a place that is right next to the reshut harabim, which is rarely gone, you know, frequented by the public. So then in that case, lo, the produce does not belong to the first one who takes it. Because a kinyan can be made in a simta. And therefore, any items that had belonged to the deceased are immediately acquired by the yorshim over there. Because it's a place of a kinyan. Only if they are gathered and placed in the reshut harabim, which is not a place of a kinyan of the yetomim, then Rabbi Tarfon said that if the creditor, the malve, or the wife goes and holds on to it and seizes it, they are kone. Rabbi Yochanan v'Resh Lakish da'amri tarvayu afilu besimta. Rabbi Yochanan v'Resh Lakish hold, even if it was seized when it was in an alley, in a simta, it is acquired. So we have here a machloket, Rav Shmuel versus Rabbi Yochanan and Resh Lakish. How to understand the din of Rabbi Tarfon, who holds tfisa, works? Where does it work? According to Rav Shmuel, only if it's in Reshut Harabim. Simta, no. According to Rabbi Yochanan Resh Lakish, even if it's found in the simta. Now the Gemara tells us, Don Dayane ke Rabbi Tarfon. There were judges, there were Dayanim who judged a similar case according to the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon, which means that they allowed the person who seized it to hold on to it. Ve'ahadre Resh Lakish le'uvda minayu. But Resh Lakish reversed their uvda, their action, which means he dismissed the psak of the Dayanim and he gave back the money to the Yorshim, in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. Amar le Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan criticized Resh Lakish. He said, Asita keshel Torah. You made the words of Rabbi Akiva as if it's midoraita, as if it's halacha leMoshe Mesinai, that you reversed, you took back the psak of the Dayanim who were posek like Rabbi Tarfon. I mean, okay, Rabbi Akiva holds like that, but that doesn't mean it's midoraita. You can't undo what they did. They were posek like Rabbi Tarfon. Which means Rabbi Yochanan holds, even though lechatchila the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, but if the Dayanim were already posek like Rabbi Tarfon, the judgment is upheld. You don't reverse it. So we have here a machloket between Resh Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan if you reverse a psak of the Dayanim in such a case. So the Gemara wants to suggest an explanation to this machloket. Lema behaka miflegi, shall we say that they disagree in the following? Demar savar ta'a bidvar mishnah chozer, that one holds, Resh Lakish holds, that if a Dayan made a mistake, ta'a bidvar mishnah, in something that is written in the Mishnah, or is an opinion of one of the Amoraim. So then, chozer, you have to reverse the din, meaning if the Dayan gave the money to someone and in the Mishnah we are posek differently than that, you have to reverse the din. That's according to Resh Lakish, and that's what he did, because he held the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva. Umar savar, but Rabbi Yochanan holds ta'a bidvar Mishnah, eno chozer, that if a mistake was made in something that is from the Mishnah, you don't have to reverse it. Once the psak was made, it doesn't have to be overruled. Maybe that's the machloket between Rabbi Yochanan and Resh Lakish. And says the Gemara, no. That's not. Dekule alma ta'a bidvar mishnah chozer. Really, both can hold a mistake in dvar mishnah. Is revoked. We change it. But what is the machloket? Behacha behaka miflegi. Over here, they argue in the following. Mar savar halacha ke Rabbi Akiva mechavero velo merabo. One holds, we hold the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, but only when Rabbi Akiva argues with his chavero, with his colleague. Not when he argues with his teacher, with his Rebbe. And Rabbi Tarfon was the Rebbe of Rabbi Akiva. And therefore Rabbi Yochanan held, in this case, the halacha is not like Rabbi Akiva, it's like Rabbi Tarfon. Umar savar, but Resh Lakish held halacha afilu merabo. The halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, even when he argued with his Rebbe, such as Rabbi Tarfon. That's why Resh Lakish held, you have to overturn the psak of the Dayanim. V'ibaiteima, or we could say a different explanation, dekule alma halacha k'Rabbi Akiva mechaviro ve'lo merabo. Really, both Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish agree that halacha is like Rabbi Akiva only when he argues with his colleague, not when he argues with Rabbo. So if that's the case, if the halacha is not when he argues with Rabbi Tarfon, so then what's the reason of Rabbi Yochanan? Over here the machloket was, Mar Savar Rabbi Tarfon Rabbo Hava Umar Savar Chavero Hava. There was a machloket. Was Rabbi Tarfon really the Rebbe of Rabbi Akiva or not? So Rabbi Yochanan held that Rabbi Tarfon was the teacher of Rabbi Akiva. Therefore, the halacha is not like Rabbi Akiva. So therefore, you don't overrule the psak of those dayanim who went like Rabbi Tarfon. But Mar Savar Chavero Hava. Rish Lakish held that no, Rabbi Tarfon was only a colleague of Rabbi Akiva, and therefore the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva. And that's why the psak had to be overruled. And the Gemara gives a third way of understanding the machloket. Ve'ibaiteima, if you want, we could say dekule alma chavero hava. Both Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish hold that Rabbi Tarfon was only the chaver of Rabbi Akiva, the colleague. Ve'hacha ve'haka miflegi. Over here, the machloket is like this between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. Mar savar halacha itmar. One holds, Rish Lakish holds, that the rule that says that the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva against chaviro, he held it's this version of the rule was halacha itmar, halacha ke Rabbi Akiva. And therefore, since halacha ke Rabbi Akiva, if you are posik otherwise, you have to overturn it. Umar savar but Rabbi Yochanan held matin itmar. Rabbi Yochanan held the rule was never that the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva necessarily against chaviro. It's just matin. That one is inclined, we are inclined to follow the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. So therefore, although we should follow Rabbi Akiva's opinion, lechatchila, Rabbi Yochanan holds, but the halacha was never really established conclusively that it has to be even b'diavad like Rabbi Akiva. And therefore, in the case where the Dayanim went against that principle and they followed Rabbi Tarfon, you don't have to overturn the psak, says Rabbi Akiva. So those are three ways in understanding this machloket between Resh Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan. The Gemara tells us a case, Kerive de Rabbi Yochanan, the relatives of Rabbi Yochanan, Tafus para de yatme misimta. They seized a cow of the orphans from the simta, from the alley, from the side alley, because the orphan's father owed them money. So these relatives of Rabbi Yochanan, they were creditors of these orphans' father, and they went and they found a cow that belongs to the property. It was standing in the simta, and they seized it. Atulikamid Rabbi Yochanan. So they came before Rabbi Yochanan for the psak, if that's okay, if they can hold on to it. Amar lehu shapir tefastuha. He said to him, "It is you did well that you seized the cow. It belongs to you, and remember that's according to the psak of Rabbi Tarfon." Then they subsequently went to Resh Lakish. He said to them, "Oh no, no, you have to go and return the cow to the orphans." Oh my, they went back to Rabbi Yochanan. They said, "What should we do?" They complained that Resh Lakish told them they have to give it back against what Rabbi Yochanan said to them. Rabbi Yochanan said to them, "What can I do? As the one who is kenegdi, the one whose greatness corresponds to mine, disagrees with me. I cannot dismiss his opinion." Look at the tremendous kavod that Rabbi Yochanan had to Resh Lakish. Although we all know that when Resh Lakish started off, he was not even a talmid of Rabbi Yochanan. Then he became a student of Rabbi Yochanan. But then he became also the colleague of Rabbi Yochanan, to the point where Rabbi Yochanan had such kavod to him, saying, "Ma'ese, I cannot go against what my colleague Resh Lakish says." The Gemara relates to us another incident here. Hahu bakra deyatme. There was a certain shepherd who takes care of the herds of the cattle that belong to the yetomim of the orphans. De tafsi Torah mine. So from whom a creditor came along and seized a Torah, a shor, an ox, as payment for a debt of the orphan's father. So here you had the shepherd of the orphans taking care of their cattle. And here comes a person who is a creditor, a person who the father of the Yetomim owed money to, and he seized an ox, he held on to it. Baal chov amar mechayim tafisnale. Now, the Baal Chov, the creditor, was saying, I seized it from the shepherd, while the father, who is the debtor, the Lovin, the one who owed me, was still alive, and therefore I can hold on to it. But the shepherd was saying, no, he seized it after he died already. And then the tfisa doesn't work, it belongs to the yatomim. They came to Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman said to the shepherd, he said to him, Itlach sa'ade de tafse, do you have witnesses that he seized the ox from you? Amar le lav, he said, I don't have witnesses. Amar le, so Rav Nachman said to him, well, in that case, migo de yachol le memar lakuach ubiadi, since if he wants, he can claim that it was lakuach, it was already purchased by me. That's how I got it. Right? He doesn't have to admit that he seized it. Yachol nami le memar mechayim tafisna le. Therefore, now that he admits that he seized it, we believe him that he seized it mechayim, when the father was still alive. In other words, that's called a migo, right? Migo, since he could have said, if he wanted to lie, he could have said, what do you mean, I purchased it, I had it because I bought it a while ago. He didn't have to say, there's no edim saying that he seized it, but he admits, he's being honest, he's admitting that he seized it, right? And then he says that he seized it mechayim, you have to believe him, he has a migo on his side. That's what Rav Nachman was posek. Asks the Gemara, Ve'ha'amar Resh Lakish ha'godrot en lahem chazaka. The Gemara is asking, how could Rav Nachman say that if he were to say that he purchased the animal, he would be believed? But Resh Lakish said, ha'godrot. Godrot means any moving livestock, any like sheep or oxen, right? Animals that wander from field to field. En lahem chazaka. There's no chazaka, there's no presumption of ownership to the one who is holding on to them. Because you could always say he found it in the field and he brought it to his house. There's no proof from the fact that he's holding on to him that he purchased it. So according to Resh Lakish, a person cannot just say, you see me holding it? I purchased it. That's not proof enough. You have to bring proof for that case. So there is no migo that Rav Nachman said. Answers the Gemara, Shani Torah de Mesira Leroe. By axe, it's different from other livestock, from other godrot, because it's handed over, de Mesira Leroe, it's handed over to the shepherd. The shepherd doesn't let it wander off. By a toad, our case over here was an ox. An ox doesn't wander by itself, the shepherd holds on to it. And therefore, if a person has possession of an ox, that does establish a chazakah, a presumption of ownership. And therefore, he could have said, it's mine from the time that I purchased it. He could have said it if he wanted to lie. The fact that he admitted that he was tofes, that he seized it, he has a migo to say that he seized it mechayim. The Gemara tells us another case, the Bei Nesia, the members of the house of the Nasi, of the prince in Eretz Yisrael, Tafus Amta Deyatme Misimta. The members of the house of the Nasi, they seized, Tafus, they took hold of a Amta Deyatme, of a maidservant that belonged to orphans, Misimta, from the alley. And they seized it as payment for a debt that was owed to them by these orphans' father. So again, the Bei Nesia, the members of the house of the Nasi, were the Tofsim here. They seized it because they were creditors. What did they seize? They seized a maidservant from the Simta, and it belonged to the Yatomim. Yativ Rabbi Abau v'Rabbi Chanina bar Papi v'Rabbi Yitzchak Napacha. So now you had Rabbi Abau, Rabbi Chanina bar Papi, and Rabbi Yitzchak Napacha. They were sitting as Dayanim. V'yativ Rabbi Abba Gabayhu, and Rabbi Abba was sitting with them as well. Amar lehu, so Rabbi Abbahu said to them. Some say it should say Amru lehu. The Rashash says it should say Amru lehu. They said, meaning the three dayanim, yeah, Rabbi Abbahu, Rabbi Chanina, and Rabbi Yitzchak. The dayanim said to the Devei Nesia, to those who seized the ama, the maidservant, Shapir tafsituha. You did well, meaning you deserve, you held on to her, you could keep her. The halakha is on your side. Amar lehu Rabbi Abba. Rabbi Abba, who was sitting next to them, he said to the three dayanim, Mishum de Benesia ninhu, what? Because they are members of the house of the Nasi. Mechanfitu lehu? You're now flattering them? You're trying to get favor with them by giving them a psak that's not true? Vehadon Dayane Kerabi Tarfon. Do we not know that there was a case, we said before, of the Dayanim who judged such a case, and they were posek like Rabbi Tarfon, that you could be tofes, but ve'adre Resh Lakish ovadaminayu. But Resh Lakish reversed their actions, which means that the halacha is not according to Rabbi Tarfon. What are you telling them? Shapir tafsitua? You can't do that. That's a wrong psak. Abutai, we're going to stop here because now the Gemara gives us a different story, although in the same topic. We'll stop here and we'll continue tomorrow from the words Yemal Bar Chashu. That's the name of a person. We'll see what the case was tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem, when we continue. Tizku l'shanim rabot, ne'imot ve'tovot.